Chapter 12. Above, the earlier rain clouds had dissipated and were replaced by a red, smoky haze and the acrid stench of something that shouldn't be burning. It was 1:30 a.m., and if I wasn't jogging, I'd be half frozen to death. It had been in the 80s earlier in the day, which was warm but not unheard of for November. But the early evening rain was strange, and even though it had been hot during the day, it was now freezing. Plenty of cars were available to me, but they were useless at this point. The closer I got to the university, the more jam-packed they were. It appeared the survivors of the attack on the stadium had tried to flee this way, and the narrow street had ended in disaster and utter gridlock. It was eerie, seeing so many cars and so little people. I didn't have the sense of being alone, however. Noise rose from every direction. Car engines revved on side streets. Loud whispering erupted as I passed a few houses. "Look, it's a cop." "No, that's just a douchebag with a gun." I heard hammering as I passed one house, like the person inside was blockading himself in. Gunfire crackled from all directions, and I don't think it was aimed at the monster. I tightened my grip on the bag and the shotgun as jets and helicopters and whooshing missiles and distant explosions continued to echo, starting and stopping in waves. And dogs. I never heard so many dogs in my life. Every single dog in the city howled. The sound had been rising in volume over the past 20 minutes, and now they were letting the terrified city have it. It was unlike anything I had ever heard. Above, a huge shadow moved across the night sky. At first I thought it was a secret stealth airplane or maybe a fast-moving cloud, but the rustle of wings and squawking gave it away. It was a tumultuous, shuddering flock of birds. They angled southeast, purposely toward the grinder. As the cloud grew and the din rose, I stopped on the sidewalk to stare. They were headed into the monster, like moths into a bug zapper. From how far away were these birds coming? Were other animals on the way to the beast also? The dogs of Tucson continued to howl. While the city and county weren't all that dense with people, the Sonoran Desert was the place to be if you were a coyote or javelina or mountain lion or one of a million other critters who called the outskirts of Tucson home. In fact, I realized right then and there, if I was a monster that could get stronger and larger by collecting living things, and I wanted a bit of variety, Tucson was the perfect place to start my rampage. If I was going to save Niff, I was going to have to do it fast. I decided I was being a pussy about stealing a car. The main road was too blocked to traverse, but the side streets were more or less clear. I stopped jogging and I looked into a car sitting on the sidewalk with the window down. It was a newer VW Bug, white with pink trim. Greek letters were embroidered into the car seats, maybe for some sorority. The keys were still in the ignition and voices rose from the car's speakers. She had satellite radio, I realized. I opened the door to step in. A blazing spotlight focused on me from above. I looked up, startled, as a helicopter came to hover over me.
"Do not move! Put down your weapon!"
An amplified voice yelled over a loudspeaker.
"We will shoot if you don't comply!"
"What the hell?" I said, dropping the shotgun on the sidewalk. I also dropped the bag, tossing it onto the hedge next to me.
"Let me see those hands, son!"
The voice boomed. The helicopter lowered, kicking up debris and rocks from the street. Instead of raising my hands, I shielded my eyes, but the voice in the sky didn't protest. Two lines dropped from the helicopter, and a pair of soldiers in all black slid down the line. One landed behind me, and the other landed on top of the VW's roof, smashing it in. Both pointed their weapons at me. I looked between the two soldiers. They were decked out like twin Special Forces Rambos. Helmets with dark visors and built-in respirators protected their faces, and each wore black chemical suits with heavy-looking overalls with tons of pockets and knives and grenades and other things that were just as deadly. The helicopter lifted and zoomed off toward another neighborhood, its spotlight searching the ground. Once the roar of the chopper faded, the soldier on the roof of the car said,
"Is this your vehicle?"
I looked between the two and lowered my arms.
"Are you fucking kidding me? A monster is trashing the city and you're going to jump on my back for stealing a car?"
"Answer the question, sir,"
the car roof soldier said.
"No! This isn't my car!"
"Where did you obtain the vest and weapon, sir?"
I could understand a normal cop on a normal day having issues with a guy in a Kevlar vest and an automatic shotgun breaking into a car in the middle of the night, but now? It didn't make any sense. "Houston,"
Have you had any physical contact with either the creature or someone who has been in contact with the creature?
I realized then why he was asking so many questions. They knew about the monster's drones, and they thought I might be one. Was it possible to catch whatever it was just by touching a drone? That gave me pause. I tried to think if I had touched someone after they'd been in contact with the grinder. Maybe the Mexican kid? But I couldn't remember if I had contact with him or not. I didn't think so. And what about the guys I'd just shot? Had any of their blood gotten on me? I'd touched Royce and Randy after they'd been touched by the drones, and their blood was all over me. That would probably count as contact, but I wasn't going to tell these guys. Hell, if the grinder had walked up and licked me, I wouldn't have told them that either. Not with those guns pointed at me. For all I knew, they had orders to shoot anyone who so much as walked funny. No, I'm just trying to make it to my girlfriend's house, I lied. Both of them lowered their guns slightly. The one on the roof jumped onto the hood, almost slid off it, and jumped down. He was tall, like 6'8" or so. Even through his chemical suit, I could tell he was rail thin, like a beanstalk.
You can't be out here,
the beanstalk said.
For the past several hours, the emergency broadcast system has been reading off the evacuation points across the city. Make your way to a point to receive transport out of here. Otherwise, you need to remain indoors.
Look, I'm all about getting off the streets. I just want to get to my girlfriend.
Hey,
the other one said.
He's got blood all over his pants.
Both the weapons came back up.
Sir,
the soldier said.
We're going to have to ask you to come with us. Please place your hands behind your back.
The other soldier talked into a radio while the beanstalk produced a pair of those plastic zip-tie handcuffs. If I didn't fear a bullet in the back of my skull, I would have tried to run. Instead, I was pushed against the car while the two tight handcuffs were placed on my wrists.
He's got a wedding ring on,
the not-so-tall one said.
Girlfriend's house, huh?
I grimaced. Ugh. I have a very complex relationship with my wife. I did my best to act calm, but on the inside, I kicked and screamed and fought. Panic washed over me. I was blowing it. I had to find Clementine. I had to save Niff. I didn't have time for this. Look, I really do have to get out of here. Where are you taking me?
You're going to stay put until our ride arrives,
not-so-tall soldier said.
We're taking you someplace safe to run some tests, and if you check out, you'll be put on a transport out of town.
What sort of tests?
Neither answered. They don't have a test. How could they, so quickly? As I leaned against the car, I realized the voices were still talking on the radio. As the soldiers whispered amongst themselves, I leaned in to hear the newscaster. The volume was too low to follow the conversation, but it was something about a mass exodus on I-10, both east and west, out of town. The words quarantine and riot were kicked around quite a bit. That's just wonderful. The soldier's radio crackled, sounded like some sort of orders.
Let's go,
the beanstalk said, grabbing me by the wrists. The other one grabbed the shotgun, but he missed the duffel bag on the hedge. I debated whether or not to point it out. I decided against it, figuring my odds of seeing it again were higher by leaving it here. I didn't know what the twins had put in the package for their baby mama, but knowing them, it was explosives or something equally illegal. We walked down the street into a neighborhood filled with smaller houses. Candlelight danced in several windows, lighting people's faces as they watched us from inside their homes.
How come you guys are picking on me? Look at all these people. They're just smart enough to stay inside.
We're not picking on you, sir. We're taking you to safety.
I doubt that. A couple minutes later, we stopped at a corner on a side street just as a Hummer pulled up. They opened the doors, shoved me in the back, and got in. The driver was decked out with the mask like the other two.
We got another pickup a quarter mile away,
the driver said, revealing herself as a woman.
Then we'll head back.
The beanstalk got in the front passenger seat, and the other guy sat in the back part on the outside. I was alone in the back seat.
What's this guy's story?
The woman asked.
He's neither C1 or 2,
the beanstalk said.
Just a sieve. Taking him in to be sure.
What's a C1?
You don't want to know,
the driver said, pulling away from the curb. I looked around, trying to get my bearings. I wasn't sure where I was anymore. This was a residential neighborhood somewhere between Broadway and 5th Street, but I didn't know where. At least we were headed in the direction I wanted to go.
How did you guys get here so fast?
The driver was much more talkative than the other two guys.
In case he hadn't noticed, a monster is stomping through some of the United States' most valuable assets. That has a tendency to light a fire under the military's ass. We're from Fort Huachuca,
she said, which I knew was about an hour and a half drive south of Tucson.
We were fixing to deploy overseas when we heard about Arizona Stadium. I'm a wildcat myself, and I was listening to the game on my iPod when it happened. A bunch of us flew in on helicopters just in time to watch DM get obliterated. The whole thing rolled through the boneyard, destroying billions of dollars worth of stored aircraft. I didn't see any of that, though. I drove straight up in this thing. I got here an hour or so ago.
I saw it from above,
the beanstalk said.
It threw a horse at us.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like we're doing so hot, I said, leaning back against the uncomfortable seat. That thing is kicking our ass, and it's sucking animals into it now, too. Did you see those birds? The zip ties burned my wrists, and I shifted uncomfortably.
I saw the birds,
she said. We pushed our way through two cars jammed together at an intersection. A couple blocks over, flames shot 30 feet into the sky from a row of townhouses.
I used to live a couple blocks from here,
the driver said.
I can't believe this.
She spoke into her radio and turned away from the fire, heading down an alley. We turned another corner and pulled up on two more soldiers with a guy in handcuffs laying on the ground. The guy twitched, and his leg was bent in the wrong direction. You're not putting that dude next to me, I said. They stopped, opened up the side, and put the dude next to me. One of the other soldiers slid into the back seat so the twitchy guy was in the middle, leaning up against me, and the other soldier jumped in the back with the tall guy's partner. This new soldier also wore the respirator mask, but his uniform was camouflaged.
We gotta see two,
the new soldier said.
Found him trying to break into a car, walking on that leg. We had to subdue him.
The twitchy guy stank like oil and wore a Circle K uniform. He was passed out, which was good for him because that leg looked like it hurt. It got caught on the seat when they shoved him in, and it bent at an unnatural angle, like the only thing keeping it attached was the skin around the outside. The guy was older, with a beard. Every couple seconds or so, his whole body would twitch, like he was being jolted awake.
He just passed out when you stuck him?
The driver asked. We made a U-turn and headed south.
Yeah,
the soldier said.
Like a bag of bricks. I hope this shit isn't contagious,
the beanstalk said. The twitchy guy groaned and fell over a little, pushing me hard against the door of the Hummer.
Guys, if I have to sit with this freak drooling all over me, the least you can do is tell me what all this C1 and C2 shit is.
The driver looked at the beanstalk, who shrugged.
I don't know what the C stands for,
the driver said.
But we're collecting people on the street and giving them designators. A C2 is someone like this guy. They're people who've fallen off the monster and lived. He's injured, but not combative, or at least not aggressive towards us, and all he wants to do is get back to the creature. It's all he'll talk about, and he cares more about that than his injuries. A C1 is someone like you. They just started popping up a couple hours ago. He looks normal, but he's also been attached to the monster. They attack us when we get close. They're usually close to the monster when they appear, but we're not taking any chances.
A thin line of bloody mucus bobbed from the guy's nose and descended onto my knee. I tried to scoot away, but I couldn't.
Yeah, but I haven't touched the thing. I'm not a see anything.
We know,
the beanstalk said.
But we have our orders. Where we picked you up? The reports say several people in that traffic jam got out of their cars and ran toward the monster. Not all of them. Just a few people. But enough to mire the road with abandoned cars. Our orders are to pick up anyone who might be coming back.
We turned the corner and pulled into an elementary school parking lot. I watched as a helicopter took off from the playground. Several Hummers were parked on the road here. If I had my bearings, we were less than a quarter mile from where they had picked me up. We'd made a giant loop. The tall soldier hopped out and opened the door.
Come on,
he said, helping me up. I tried to wipe my leg on the seat, but missed. The other soldiers grabbed Twitchy and half-carried, half-dragged him toward the double doors of the school as we followed. I suddenly missed the twins as we were brought inside. They would have been so excited by this. They simultaneously loved and hated the U.S. government. I wondered if they would have been surprised at how quickly this was set up. We walked into organized chaos. Somehow the power was on, but the place looked dark from the outside. Very covert. Hundreds of masked soldiers filled classrooms, all receiving briefings while others, soldiers and people in respirator suits, ran about like extras in a Virus Destroys the Earth movie. The walls of the hallways were filled with drawings and artwork of the children who went to school here. A lot of it had fallen from the walls and the bustle, cluttering the floors. I don't know why, but that part bothered me. To see the soldiers walking all over the kids' work. The soldiers in front of me continued to drag the passed-out man through the hallway, and a child's hand turkey caught on the bottom of his dirty, bloody boot, ripping as it was towed down the hall. The twitchy guy was passed off to a group of other soldiers, and I was turned down another hallway with the two soldiers who had picked me up. We walked through a zippered plastic wrap entranceway duct-taped to the wall and emerged into a plastic tube that ran along the right half of the hallway. Several older, officer-looking men rushed up and down the non-plastic tube side of the hallway, all of them talking into brick-like phones with giant antennae. None of them wore masks. Through the plastic, I heard things like, "We need more time," and "If it amoeba's on us," and lots of numbers being thrown about. The officers looked harried and afraid, which freaked me out. In all those World War II war movies, it was the soldiers who were harried and afraid, but the officers stood there and chewed on the butts of their cigars while bullets whizzed by their heads. I was taken into the cafeteria. The tube snaked along the wall and then stopped in front of a table on the outside of the containment. The man sitting there looked like a human bulldog. The older, leathery man sported a buzz cut and scars up and down his wide, wrinkled face. He looked like the type of guy who would be typecast as an arch-enemy in a straight-to-video action movie.
"A C2, already dropped into containment, and a probable sieve,"
the beanstalk said. The man at the table looked me up and down through the clear plastic.
"Where'd you get the Kevlar?"
he asked.
"He also had this,"
the other soldier said, holding up my automatic shotgun.
"Plus, he's covered in blood."
Are we really going to go over this again? What would you do if you weren't in the military and you needed to get to someone you loved?
The bulldog stared at me for a good 20 seconds, which is a long time when you're just standing there. I stared back at him, though it was easier through the plastic.
"He's probably a sieve,"
he said.
"But we better keep him in quarantine just in case."
My heart skipped a couple beats.
"Wait a second.
There's no room,"
the tall soldier said.
"The C1s will tear him up."
"Then stick him with the C2s,
the bulldog said.
"Come on! What if those guys are contagious? Look, I gotta get out of here. You can't keep me like this."
"If it's contagious, then you're already sick. It'll just be for a couple hours. Probably.